Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for coming by for another episode of the podcast. I have with me today Brett Lloyd, who has an extremely interesting story to tell that I think will resonate with a ton of people out there. He is one of those names that pops up on every single health podcast I seem to find because everyone wants to just rack his brain on what he has learned over the course of his life through a whole host of different mental struggles and having different solutions thrown around by, you know, the TV and the media and people, and eventually just coming to the realization that it's something as simple as diet is actually the solution to fixing the majority of brain problems in the world. So Brett Lloyd, I appreciate you so much for coming by, man. Thank you for being here.
I appreciate you having me on. It's a thrill to be here. I haven't done a carnivore interview in a while, so you know, it's going to be a good conversation. We're going to have a good time, and hopefully we're going to help people change their lives.
I love it, man. So as I said, you have an incredible story to tell, and you are a very gifted storyteller. I love the way that you walk people through the course of your life. So why don't we just start with the beginning, just your upbringing, where you were as you were being raised, and how the decades went by, because you really have sort of a decade by decade growth of just going through different realizations over time, experimenting with different things to different results. So why don't you walk my listeners through that?
Well, I was born in Huntington, West Virginia, 63 years ago. I just recently turned 63. And mom and dad had an enormous vegetable garden. We had fresh vegetables year round, pretty much. And what wasn't picked that day, you know, mom and dad canned. So, like I said, we had fresh vegetables year round. Always, we always had plenty of meat. We were a textbook food pyramid family. We were following the guidelines, the directions, if you will. And out of the four of us, my dad passed away in 2020 after 20 plus years with type 2 diabetes that no one got to him in time with to tell him that was reversible. By the time I learned what I learned via the carnivore lifestyle, his dementia was already overwhelming him. And so his kidneys crapped out, which is very common when someone's got long-term type 2 diabetes. My mom suffered from a myriad of health issues her whole life, gallbladder removal, various sundry procedures for this, that, and something else. My little baby 6 foot tall sister suffered, almost died from ulcerative colitis. And I suffered from chronic mental illness for 43 years, major depression, which later became major depression with psychotic features, anxiety, and insomnia. And so if you got a vegetable garden, turn it into something else, because I'm telling you.
It's good chicken food.
Yeah, very much so. It was, we thought, my parents obviously had no clue that what they were doing was damaging to all of us, or they wouldn't have fed us that. I started experiencing symptoms around the age of 15. That's when the sleep disruption started. Interesting story. When I was growing up, you know, I was a young boy, my parents reported years later, I was a lot of fun to be around. I was happy. It was just fun. A fun kid to have near you. And then I got hit by a car on a bicycle the summer between my fifth and sixth grade year. No broken bones. I did get knocked out on impact. And after that accident, I became an angry, depressed, frustratingly annoying young man. And of course, my parents didn't tell me that until I was in my early 50s. I'm like, well, you know, if you'd have told me that when I was in my 20s, that might have been helpful. As a lot of people do when they're suffering from something and that they're unaware of, I I found myself very interested in the psychology field. And for a time, I had a promising career in psychology, which I sabotaged due to my major depression that I, looking back, I could see clearly I was already in that pit to a degree. And the interesting thing about that is I was working with PhD level psychologists around a lot of psychiatrists. I worked in a private profit psych hospital in Johnson City, Tennessee for a time. And nobody noticed that there was something wrong with Brett, which I always found interesting. There's another side story to that. If we have time later, I'll share that's kind of fun.
We got all the time. This is a ramble, infinitely friendly space here.
Well, one of the big things about that group of psychologists, I mean, I used to play ping pong with them, used to hang out with them. We used to get together and drink together, all that kind of stuff. But they were always chasing the next paper they could write because they wanted to be published. They especially wanted, at that time, this was in the 80s, and Psychology Today was a big deal. And they were constantly whining and moaning. Their paper got rejected or something fell through, et cetera. And many years after I became carnivore, Dr. Georgia Ead, who wrote a column for Psychology Today, included a bit about me in that, in my health journey. Awesome. And she didn't go into great detail or anything. She just mentioned that I was a musician who had eliminated chronic illness with the carnivore lifestyle. And all I could think of was, I got published. I wonder if those guys ever did.
Georgia Ead is the best. I'll throw some links in the show notes for people to go watch her presentations, because the work that she's done is so relevant to your story, because she really stays focused on the brain and why, if you don't include animal products in your diet, or ideally all animal products, zero plants, your brain is fighting an uphill battle, because your brain needs those meat parts, like, because it's literally a big glob of fat. If you're not feeding it fat, it's going to have problems. The human body is not good at breaking plants down into usable animal tissue that we're made of. That to be healthy. So
that's absolutely correct. And Georgia Ead is one of two psychiatrists that I would actually let work with me if I needed psychiatric assistance, Dr. Chris Palmer being the other one. Those are the only two psychiatrists on planet Earth I would ever sit down and talk to. Thankfully, don't need any of that anymore. In my 20s, I started medicating with alcohol, which ran its usual course when you're using it to medicate with. I had no idea that I was doing that, but that's exactly what I was doing. Got married, had first time around, had a son. I wrecked that marriage through very poor behavior. I was not a good husband. That was the one big thing about my mental illness at the time. No one else, they just would wonder now and then again, what's wrong with him? I was constantly sabotaging myself in foolish ways. And
would you consider it like depression at that point, or was it sort of a unique mix of problems?
It was depression. It was depression, and I was making it worse unknowingly by the consumption of depressant beverages. Yep. And plus, I didn't have any inkling about spiritually manifesting things and whatnot. So I was constantly in a negative state of thinking, and I was perpetuating and creating more misery for myself without ever having a clue that I was the one responsible for all this. I thought the rest of the world was really screwed up and it wasn't me. Turns out the opposite was true. Anyway, my life became unmanageable. due to depression, I checked myself into a hospital in Huntington, West Virginia. Spent 16 days there. If you dig back through my Instagram far enough, you'll see the picture they took the day I was admitted. And I looked like a wreck, because I was. And I made some behavioral decisions during that 16 days that I was hospitalized. And then they sent me out the door with the Prozac prescription and a few boxes of samples. And back then, Prozac was very expensive. Not that it's cheap now, but back then it was really insanely high. And after a while, I had to stop taking it because I couldn't afford it. My insurance wouldn't cover it. And that didn't work out so good. First marriage, we ended in a divorce. My first wife was a Walmart Supercenter manager. We moved to Bristol, Virginia. And for a time, life got better. Change of scenery, change of environment, change of routine. So I improved a bit through that. But ultimately, I wasn't happy. She wasn't happy. It was, and we were trying to raise a son, and he wasn't benefiting from either of our being miserable. So got divorced, met my second wife and the final wife, God willing. We've been together 27 years now, married for 26. She and I met online and back in the Windows 3.11 days in an IRC chat room.
What does IRC stand for?
Internet Relay Chat.
So one of the real OG chat rooms. That's up there, like the MSN Messenger, even before that, probably. That was my first one.
Yeah, it was 1990, end of 94 into 95, I think, somewhere around in there. And we found out we lived within a reasonable distance from each other, which was at that time very rare. Most of the time you would meet people that you would find interesting and they'd be 12, 15, 18 hours away. And it just nothing could ever really materialize out of that. But we met, I'll never forget, we met at the Asheville, North Carolina airport during the day, just in case either one of us was an axe murderer. And we had the best time. We went and ate some lunch and shared kid pictures and things like that. And then we went and sat on this bench outside the Biltmore Estates, because what they wanted to go on the Biltmore tour was ridiculously expensive. I'm sure it still is expensive. But we sat on this bench and talked for hours and hours and hours and hours and doing nothing. And we both had such a good time that that's where our life together really started. Ultimately I moved to where she was living at. She was moving to Greenville, South Carolina, had just gotten there when she got to come and visit me in North Carolina. And we started living together. And life was pretty awesome. Absolutely awesome. For a time. And later we got married. And we noticed my behavior at times would just suddenly go south for no real explanation. A few months before I met her, I had really bad problems with anxiety. So much so that one night I called 911. I thought I was having a heart attack, for real. I mean, and I convinced the EMT people that I was probably having one as well. They did the nitro under the tongue thing on the way to the hospital, just all that kind of stuff. And they hooked me up to, I believe it was an EKG machine. And thankfully, there was nothing wrong with my heart. absolutely nothing. But no one, nobody said or asked the question, you know, do you have issues with anxiety? Which I didn't even think about. But I can remember different times while driving, you know, and somebody would cut me off or get too close in, you know, cross into my lane or something. I could feel my heart pounding so hard. It was like it was going to jump out of my chest. I distinctly remember that. And so finally a doctor in Newport, Tennessee, where I was living at the time, said, if you don't start taking medication, your life's going to become very uncomfortable. So started using Prozac, and I took Prozac for the next 23 years. And looking back on it, I, for about 2.5 to 3 years, which took us into the second or beginning of the third year of my second marriage, I did better. I still wasn't quite right, but I was better. But then after that 3 year period, things started going south. And I began what I called the illness wellness cycle. My periods of wellness started to shrink and my periods of illness started to grow. My doctor's response to that was to give me a higher dose of Prozac. And I got to the place, dosage-wise, where I started having bad headaches. Because you start taking too much for your system to tolerate, then that's the result. Pardon me, here I have to be able to breathe. I have a deviated septum, and it costs $25,000 to get it repaired, and there's no guarantee that it will last. So
medical system.
Yeah. So I deal with it via nose spray. I'm sending somebody's kids to college and whatnot with that. Anyway, I'm living in the Greenville, South Carolina area. I'm a musician. Start gigging again, and life seems pretty good most of the time. But the periods of wellness started getting smaller to the point to where there were none anymore. And the late 90s, early 2000s, I really started spiraling. And I quit smoking cigarettes, and then all the garbage that I used to enjoy suddenly became 1,000 times more addictive and delicious to me. And so I started putting on a ton of weight. I'm only 6 foot tall now. Then I was 6'2", but still 250 pounds on my frame back then was way too much. Then in 2007, 2008, around in that period of time, a familial thing happened that I don't get into detail about publicly, but it was extraordinarily stressful, and I had a 6 week to 2 month period where I did not sleep more than 1 or 2 hours a night. And when you go that long without getting enough proper rest, bad things start to happen. That's when my diagnosis got bumped from major depression to major depression with psychotic features. Because when you hear children playing in the yard and you're the only one at home, that's not a good thing. So then he put me on this drug called Remeron. And I'll never, you know, I always mention Remeron because it did put me to sleep for 2 weeks. For 2 weeks, I slept like a king. Just, but I also gained 25 pounds in 2 weeks. It's a notorious weight gaining medication. And then after 2 weeks, it stopped working. And I went on another 6 to 8 week tear of 1 or 2 hours of sleep. And things started getting really scary then. That's when they pulled out the antipsychotic meds. And they hit on this combination of an antipsychotic that I can never, olapazine, I can't ever pronounce it, and Prozac together, and they called it Symbiax, which was very expensive. It was also very, I would sleep 10 to 12 hours a night, which that part was good. But then during the day, I would need to take 1 or 2 2-hour naps. So you do the math on that. I didn't have much of a life whatsoever. I had an existence. And I was not anywhere close to well at all. I just stopped getting worse. Didn't play my instrument for over a year because music for me is a very emotional thing. And I didn't want to open that can of worms in that state of being. After almost a year of living like that, I woke up one morning in December of 2008 and thought, I can't keep doing this. This is not working. This is not life. My wife's scared to death. I'm not any fun to be around. I don't even like being around me. So I could just imagine what it was like for her and the kids. And that's my only real regret that I have is that I was raising kids while I was nuts. And that wasn't good for them at all. So I have this talk with myself and I thought, I'm going to get better through a force of will. Come hell or high water, I've got to get better. I've got to make myself get better. And for a time, that worked a little. I did get better. I got to the place where, you know, didn't take the Symbiax anymore and was just, by that time I was on Prozac. I was on Ativan for my anxiety. And they put me on a drug called Trazodone, which is another SSRI, but it's also used off-label to help people with insomnia problems. I did sleep a lot better, but I woke up with a drug hangover every morning for 8.5 years. And was eking out in existence. And I stepped on the scales because I couldn't see my feet. What am I up to? I was like almost up to, I was over 260. I told my wife, I said, I got to do something to lose this weight. This is not good. And she said, well, here's this Atkins diet that I've heard a lot of good things about. Okay. And I did my usual crazy Brett. I kind of glossed over it a bit. Okay. I can eat, get rid of the bread, get rid of the potatoes and eat all the meat I want and some leafy greens. And at that time, all the really yummy sugar addicting, Atkins approved, candies and candy bars and all that, shakes and all. I did all that.
Basically the original keto, like, yeah, you know, some bad stuff is taken out, but you're allowed some poison and it's just kind of vague.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know, I drank several thousand gallons of those shakes, not knowing at the time I was just making that sugar addiction as firm as we could make it. And I did lose a bunch of weight. I lost like 35 pounds and my mood improved. But at no time did myself, my wife, or our doctor make the connection that it was the dietary change that was causing me to feel bad. You know, I started playing guitar again. Got to attend my 30-year high school class reunion, started writing songs, released some really badly produced albums with some good songs on them. And because as a crazy man, I had all the recording software. I knew how to do it up to a point, but I couldn't understand how to use equalizers and compressors and things that are needed to create a professional sounding recording. I just couldn't process it. So you know, like I said, a lot of good songs, a lot of great performances, horrible mixes. I can't believe people at different online radio stations ever even played the first note of it, but they did because the songs were so strong. I got to a place where I started traveling to churches. I was very much I converted to Catholicism, which probably helped save my life during the worst parts, because that fear of eternal damnation, if you off yourself, that'll keep you on this side of the grass. It really will. Anyway, and things were going good on Aikens. Was in a band again. Life was pretty special, we thought, at that time. But then I got the sick notion, man, I really miss my ice cream. I miss my coconut cream pie. And I really miss those big triple-layered coconut cakes you could get at Sam's. I love those things. And so I thought, well, I'll go back to eating that. And if I gain a bunch of weight back, well, I'll just go back on Atkins. What could go wrong, Ben? What could go wrong?
Calories in, calories out. We've all heard that. We know that's the way it goes. Yeah.
I got to, it's going to work. Fast forward to July of 2010. I'm at Mass on a Sunday evening by myself. I'd ridden my motorcycle to church that evening. And at that time, I was very much into Catholicism. Mass was very important to me. It's before communion. We're on our knees. Everybody's praying. And this crazy notion struck me. If you don't get out of here right now, something really bad's going to happen. And it was a visceral kind of feeling. It's time to go. And so I did something very atypical for me at that time, is I literally ran out of that church, hopped on my bike, and came home. And in about 15 minutes, I'm stretched out on our living room couch, bawling like a baby, and have no idea why. None. And so that began the worst 5-6 years of my life ever. 5 years, solid 5 years of just absolute misery. They kept throwing different medications at me. They changed my diagnosis because, geez, they couldn't be doing something futile by giving me drugs that didn't really do anything for me except make me crazier and more obese. And I just got worse. And then my wife's job got transferred to Jacksonville, Florida, where we knew nobody. But still, you know, she was the one making the money, keeping food on the table, roof over our heads, because I couldn't work. I couldn't do anything. And we come to Jacksonville and I start fishing for doctors, I called it. One doctor's assistant is thinks I've got a thyroid problem. That's the cause of it. And puts me on a thyroid med without giving me a thyroid test. That was genius. And I thought the top of my head was going to explode. And she fired me. I didn't know you could get fired as a patient, because I wrote her an email going, what the hell's going on here? You know, I took this in good faith as prescribed. And I feel like somebody shot me in the head. And so then I'm back to hunting for another doctor. I finally found a nurse practitioner who seemed to get me. She seemed to understand, and she put me on a medication called Seroquel, which actually for about 6 months, we thought that might be the answer we've been looking for. I got back into writing, and started being very creative, feeling a lot more present in reality than I had been. But at the end of that 6 month period, it all went to hell again. And then they added Abilify, and then we really started this medication merry-go-round. I was on, I tried different seizure meds. Lamictal is one specifically I remember. And the same thing would happen. I might feel a little better or more stable for a short period of time. And then I'd feel worse. I'd be right back in the pit, right back in the ditch. And full moons got to be really a problem. Now, it wasn't something that I was doing to myself, because my wife and I at times would be like, why is your, you know, nothing has happened. There was no kind of, you know, there was no job loss. There was no car breakdown. There was nothing to warrant the kind of mood crashes that I would have. And then I started noticing, well, the moon's full. And we know we're like 90% water anyway, and we see what the moon does to the tide. So, but it didn't happen every full moon. It just happened every once in a while.
Those crazy hippie girls are onto something, man. They know some things about the astrological bodies. I mean, to see that doesn't cause anything to us, come on. I mean, no, there's something there. I haven't dug deep into it, but I know there's definitely something to look into.
Oh, there's real science has proven it. It's not just, you don't have to be in the woo-woo world to think that. It's scientifically proven that many people, especially those suffering with certain types of mental illness, have very negative responses around a full moon or a new moon. And fast forward, I mean, that began the worst, that was the worst 5 years of my life.
And this what age now in a year, just for a reference?
You're talking about from 2011 to 2015.
Okay.
And January of 2015, I weighed 289 pounds. I was on 7 different meds. I honest to God didn't think I was going to live out the year, because, you know, I had that, you know, that education in psychology and working in a hospital environment, and people who have to take psych meds chronically tend to lose a third of their lifespan. And so for me, it was just a matter of simple math, thinking, okay, I'm in that, you know, last third of my life. This is not looking good. And around that time, I had written some blues music that I felt really good about, but I knew I couldn't sing it. And so I put an ad on Craigslist, and this really talented lady, who unfortunately we no longer associate together, but for about 7 or 8 years we did, and we created a lot of music together, had some serious fun with it. But she came into my life, and she's watching me fall apart. I'm still somehow able to focus and record her, and we made an album. But she finally says one day, have you ever thought about medical marijuana? Now, Ben, as a musician, it was always around me, but I had a bad experience with it as a teenager. I didn't know about things like tolerance and you know, how just a little bit would go a very long way. So I had a bad experience with it once because I ignorantly used too much. You know, got sick, passed out, and I'm like, well, hell, I can do that with beer for a lot less money and not feel so freaked out in the process. So it just wasn't my thing. You know, during breaks, you know, a joint would go around and I would always pass it. It just wasn't for me. But her saying that, my wife and I talked about it. And I'm like, well, I did everything. I was every doctor, nurse practitioner, whatever I was asked to do, I did it. I didn't argue about it. I didn't want to be crazy anymore. These were medical professionals. So I listened to them and I did it all. I showed up. I never missed a doctor's appointment. If I had talk therapy, I always showed up. If they gave me a workbook to do before I came to talk therapy, I did that. I did it all. And I just got worse. And my wife and I were like, well, what do we have left to lose? Because the last psychiatrist I'll ever have, not named Georgia Eater, Dr. Chris Palmer, told me, said, you need to seriously consider electroshock therapy or a long-term hospitalization. And I had seen ETC patients, or ECT, yeah, ECT patients, and right after they'd had 50,000 volts run through their head, and I didn't want to become an animated corpse. Not to mention, it was like $50,000 a treatment. It's absurd. And I had a genuine fear that if I checked myself into some facility, assuming I could figure out a way to pay for it, I might never come out. And so my wife and I talked about the cannabis thing, and she's like, well, what do we have to lose? Nothing else has worked. What can hurt to try this? And we secured 4 grams of flour, which is a minute amount of cannabis. And she found a can of butter recipe, and she made these little keto cookies about the size of a quarter. And I'll never forget the first day I took one. I was scared to death of it because I remembered my bad experience. So I broke it in half and ate it. And about 15 minutes later, it was like 1,000 suns had lifted off my body. I wasn't high yet. It's just for the first moments in many years, I didn't feel like crap anymore. Just didn't feel like crap anymore. And then the high kicked in after 45 minutes. And suddenly I learned that medical marijuana treated my symptoms beautifully. They did what all those meds I took for all those years never touched. My anxiety came down to almost zero. My mood was elevated significantly. My wife comes home from work that day, and I meet her at the door smiling. And she, what is wrong? Something's not right.
What'd you do?
I said, no, you don't get it. Those cookies work. They really work. And it took her about 6 weeks before she finally accepted that that was real, because I was a mess. I could not, at that time, without the can, I couldn't accurately perceive my environment. My wife would say, it looks like it's going to be a beautiful day today, Ben. That's awesome. My illness would filter it, twist it, and turn it, and never in my favor. And what I honestly heard my wife say in the tone of voice she used was, oh, yeah, it looks like it's going to be another beautiful day. That's just great. And, of course, that's what I truly believe I heard. I adore my wife. What's a husband who adores his wife do when he hears something in that tone of voice? He said, what's wrong? What do you mean, what's wrong? I just told you. It looks like it's going to be a beautiful day. And I could never hear what she was saying accurately. So, you know, you can just imagine what it was like living with somebody like me who couldn't communicate with her. She kept talking to me like I was sane, which I most definitely was not. She didn't have a background in psychology. She didn't have a clue on what to do. Anyway, so 10 days after I started eating the cookies, I'm sitting on the edge of the bed trying to put my shoes on, and my belly's in the way. Red light. That's not good. Your belly's in the flipping way. And I went and looked in the mirror and saw myself accurately for the first time in many years. And I looked like one of the newly dead on the Walking Dead TV show. It just had that greenish gray cast to my face. My eyes were sunken back. My jowls were out to here. I just looked like a heart attack or a stroke victim just waiting to occur. My left hip hurt all the time. I had problems with this shoulder. I couldn't raise my arm up past a certain point. I was literally falling apart. And I stepped on the scales and saw 289. Oh my gosh, that's bad. That's only 11 away from 300. Oh man. So I yelled at my wife. I'll never forget, before she left for work that day, I said, "Tonight we're starting Atkins again," as we understood it. And so over the next 3 years, using medical marijuana, the low carb, as I understood it at the time, which was very poor, my wife would make these big piles of ground beef, and she would put mozzarella cheese in it. But she would always drain the fat off because, hey, we're still under the lie that fat's bad for you. I might have gotten
fat
better
makes years. You fat. Everyone knows that.
Yeah, I might have gotten better years sooner if we hadn't have done that. But that's what we did. And over the next 3 years, I walked off 94 pounds. I walked so many miles that I wore off all the tread on my tennis shoes. You'd look at the bottom of those shoes and there was nothing there, nothing. In fact, I walked 41 miles 1 week and my knees were like, "Okay, you need to stop this shit, man. We're going to go on strike. You know, take it down to 20 miles a week, you'll do fine." But anyway, I walked off 94 pounds in 3 years. At the end of 2015, I was off the antipsychotics and the antidepressants. In 2016, I got off the Ativan. That was the more troublesome drug to titrate off of. And by the end of 2017, I was off the trazodone. And I was just using cannabis to assist me with sleep. And needless to say, I felt so much better. But I still wasn't well. I was still nuts. Cannabis didn't heal anything. It just elevated my quality of life.
Gave you some leeway to start like looking at things from a healthier perspective and start problem solving a little bit. Because you mentioned earlier how the first time you did Atkins, it helped you feel better, but you just didn't have the mental clarity yet to really connect those dots. And I mean, you don't even need like mental illness for that to happen. It's so consistent that people don't really connect the dots when they change their diet, because it's typically a gradual change as their body is, you know, getting less toxins put into it. And there's so much indoctrination in our heads that diet doesn't matter, that we just mentally just don't think that it's doing anything. We think it can't because we've been told so many times it doesn't. So, I mean, just even in your situation, just having a little bit more of a level head to start thinking about the situation, I imagine was everything.
It was very helpful. And I established this routine, and the same friend of mine that recommended I look into medical marijuana messages me one day and says, oh my gosh, you got to go watch every video made by this man named Dr. Jordan Peterson. And if you don't know who Dr. Jordan Peterson is, then you need to go find out. He's got a million hours worth of content on YouTube. Go check it out. Watch it all. You're going to learn something every time. Anyway, and when back then, this is April 2018, when you search for Jordan Peterson, you got what we called the Jordan Peterson Destroys Collection, where he would render media people, interviewers, unable to speak with common sense and logic. One poor woman, she couldn't talk for like 10 seconds. It was hilarious. And so my routine was, you know, 4:20 showed up. I'm eating a cookie and watching Jordan Peterson videos. I'm having a blast. But then I come across this 30-minute cutout of him on Joe Rogan, where he describes how his daughter, bless her heart, had what all the health problems she had with horrible arthritis, depression, taking antidepressants at 10, age 10. I mean, I can't even fathom that. She had two joints replaced, hobbled around in 1 year, hobbled around on one leg for a year, that kind of thing. And then she broke out in this awful rash and of sores and whatnot that would not heal, and she thought she was going to die. So she got really hardcore researching things, and after she went through all the medical stuff and whatnot, she thought, well, she remembered how when she was in university and it came time around for finals and stuff, she would eat a lot of garbage crap. And she always felt worse. Well, then so she thought, well, might there be a dietary connection to all of this? And so she started eliminating things. And finally, she got down to where it was just beef, salt, and water. Her arthritis symptoms vanished. Her depression vanished. I found out in the same talk that Jordan Peterson himself, the man who wrote 12 Rules for Life, that brilliant book, was suffering from depression.
Like debilitating bad depression. He was really wrecked.
I just thought he was tired because he was always writing and lecturing and all. You know, I could see the dark circles, but I didn't at the time equate that with mental illness. Now I could spot it from 1,000 yards away and recognize it. But then he explained, you know, he had experienced an 80% diminishment of his anxiety. His depression was gone. He lost a ton of weight, and he never felt better in his life. Now, if this is anybody but Jordan Peterson telling me this, the man who talks about the value of telling the truth, or at least not lying, I've changed the channels, because Ben, you know, just eating meat, only meat, that's crazy. That's ludicrous. What the hell is he saying? So my wife comes home from work that day. I said, before you do anything, you've got to watch this with me. I need to make sure I'm hearing what I'm hearing. And she watched it with me, and she said, yeah, that's exactly what he said. And that led to start doing a deep dive into the carnivore diet. And immediately the next person who showed up in my search engine was none other than Dr. Sean Baker. You know, he aptly, rightly said that he had witnessed many people eliminate all forms of mental illness from their life with this diet, in addition to type 2 diabetes, arthritis, and other various ailments. And then I found the talk that clinched it for me. There's a 2017 at Keto Fest. Amber O'Hearn gave a talk. It was more of an anthropology kind of thing. But she explained in a way that I, a guitar player, could understand how, as a species, we literally came down out of the trees and grew these energy-demanding brains, which were actually larger then than they are now because of agriculture. And how we grew these stout skeletal structures, which are actually smaller now thanks to agriculture, and from eating only meat. And I mean, she talks about the cecum and things like, I didn't even know I had a cecum. Anyway, so I looked at my wife after watching that and I said, I got to do this. I can't not try this. I can't wonder, well, would it have worked? No, I've got to try it. So July 16th, 2018, that was day one of my carnivore experience. Today is my 2,070th consecutive day of only eating meat and only drinking water. I've had exactly zero cheat days. And I will never have a cheat day. I, 10 days into it, I woke up without joint pain for the first time as an adult. I mean, I'd never been diagnosed with arthritis or anything, but I'd fallen down and gone boom a few times. You know, I was one of those guitar players, despite my girth, I would jump up on a table to play a solo for entertainment purposes. And sometimes the table would cooperate And then sometimes the table would be like, I don't want you up here. And the table would collapse. And in that situation, what you do is you keep playing. You protect your instrument. You don't stop playing. And if you walk around like a question mark for the next 2 or 3 days, hey, that's rock and roll. So I had a lot of aches and pains from that kind of stupidity. Well, I woke up without joint pain, Ben. I was taking my early morning walks at 6 in the morning, and I'm skipping down the sidewalk, giggling like a little boy, because it doesn't hurt, and I can do it. I could skip again. And then on the 24th day, and I almost always get emotional when I go through this part, I'm taking my morning walk, and my biggest fear had been, once I started carnivore, was that I was going to assume wellness too soon and create one of those placebo-type backlashes. I didn't want to do that. So I'd been very cautious. I'd been feeling better. I felt more energy. My wife had started to notice that my wrinkles in my face were starting to go away. But I'm taking that walk, and it's like somebody flipped a switch. And all that rage, and all that anger, and all that darkness, and all that shadowy bullshit, it all just went away. It just went away. And it's never come back, not even for a moment. And it was replaced by a waterfall of joy that has not left me. Hasn't left me. Not for 1 second has it left me. And that's why I do these interviews. That's why I share my story. Because people need to know you're not broken. I had a client recently, and this client, as they were detailing what they were experiencing, it reminded me so much of me, I almost broke down then. I was like, I've been where you're at. And neither you nor I were put here to be miserable. You're not broken. Your mom and dad didn't make a mistake. You don't have a character flaw. You've just been eating crap you should never have put into your mouth. And there's a way out of this mess. And that's when I realized I had to thank the people that contributed to my wellness. And in March of 2022, I actually got to meet Jordan Peterson in person in Pensacola, Florida. Got to shake his hand and thank you. Because without him, you and I weren't having this talk. You and I are, you know, I'm there's no thankful carnivore. I'm probably still smoking pot all day long and eking out an existence. Still crazy as a bedbug in a bonfire. But then I thought, well, this is amazing. And I started talking about it on Facebook, and I had this lady reach out to me. She's a few years older than me, but we'd grown up and gone to the same high school, et cetera. And she said, what are you doing? And I told her, this is how I eat. I gave her the directions, and she said, well, I'm going to try this because I've got multiple sclerosis. And they're telling me I'm going to spend most of the rest of my life in a wheelchair as I slowly die piece by piece. And I said, well, I can't promise you anything, but it won't hurt you. Well, she fired her neurologist 6 weeks later, because 6 weeks later, she was symptom free. And that's when I realized I got to be an advocate for this. I'm an example that other people can follow and experience their wellness. And so I did the first CarnivoreCast interview I ever did. That was my very first interview. And I thought, Ben, I thought, well, 50 people will hear it, 25 will like it, and 25 people will think, well, that guy's just crazy still. The way he's talking, he's not well. Anyhow, the response was overwhelmingly positive. The best, most heart-moving message I've still gotten to this day was from a young man. It was a voice message on Instagram. He was 21, 22 years old, somewhere around in there. And he thanked me for doing the Carnivore Cast because he said, because of what I said, he no longer wanted to kill himself. Now, how do you forget that? You can't. Unless you just have no conscience. And so that's when I really started pushing being an advocate for the carnivore lifestyle and doing as many interviews as I possibly could, so that I could spread my story to everyone. My objective has always been when everybody who needs to hear my story has heard it, then I can just go back to being a guitar player again. And that's pretty much the state of things now. Although some things have changed, I'm no longer a practicing Catholic. I'm into spiritualism instead. And I'm moving my life more and deeper into that. But without carnivore, that doesn't happen. Carnivore is the foundation for all of the wonderful things that have happened to me since I started it. And every time I think it can't get any better than this, I find out the very next day how wrong I am, because every day is always better than the day before. So don't ever give up, never surrender. And I'll shut up for a while. And I know you got some questions to throw at me.
That's why I brought you here, man. I love the way that you tell your story, and I appreciate so much you sharing all that, because I mean, I can imagine you got all these randos like me just flooding the DMs like, hey, can you please go through your entire emotional roller coaster all over again, over and over on the internet for me? because we love your story.
No, thank you. I used to get a lot. This is the first carnivore interview I've done really in a couple of years.
Oh, cool.
I haven't minded because I had reached a place where I'd been interviewed so much. There was really nothing new to say. I didn't really have anything new to add. Now today I've got new things to add that are relevant to the carnivore lifestyle. Some of it's spiritual, most of it's just from living this way for 2,070 consecutive days. You pick up things that you wouldn't expect to pick up that are valuable for other people to employ. I got into grounding, for instance. Vastly improve my quality of sleep. If you don't know what grounding is, it's basically when we are in direct contact with the planet in our bare feet or sitting on, you know, our hands in the grass, whatever. Electrons come up out of the earth and enter our body and reduce the inflammation within us. There's a documentary called The Earthing Movie that you can see.
Incredible. I'm so glad you brought that up, because that was the one that really turned me onto it. I can't remember who sent it to me, but it's incredible.
It's on YouTube everywhere. It's on the Gaia channel. If you've got Gaia, when I lay down at night to go to sleep, I wake up in exactly the same position I lay down in. This side of my hair is pillow head. This side looks like my wife combed it all night. So, you know, it's been, and I used to be somebody who wrestled in the bed. You know, I would get wrapped up in the bottom sheet, drove my wife nuts. Grounding was a big thing. Controlling your thinking is also, that's the newest thing that I want to share, is because I've come to understand the power of our mind in a way that I didn't fully comprehend before. And, you know, thoughts are a form of energy. So when we think a negative thought, that thought goes out into the universe and attracts other negative thoughts. And then it all comes back to us. And just as when I was in a negative state of mind 24/7, I literally manifested more misery because I was putting out more negative thoughts. I never stopped putting out negative thoughts for decades. And of course, I got more negativity thrown right in my face all the time. So it's really important for those of you who are starting this journey to start remembering this, because you can control your thoughts. You don't have to listen to that endless loop of negativity in your head. Instead, I would encourage everybody to focus on their intuition, because our intuition will never mislead us. It will never lead us down the wrong path. Four plus years ago, I made the decision, after I thought about it for a long while, that I would never make another decision that I didn't run through my intuition first. And I've had to make a lot of hard choices and decisions since then. You know, stay in this band, leave this band, you know, record this, don't record that, whatever it was. Take this job, don't take this job. And it's always worked out perfectly for me. I haven't had any negative impact from that. So stay out of your head, because your brain can justify doing the craziest damn stuff. I mean, it just will, because that's what it does. If we really want that ice cream, we can justify through human idiocy, literally, and create what we believe is a valid reason to do that to ourselves. And it's just not necessary. So focus on thinking positively, even if you're not feeling positive at the time. Work on it. Trust your intuition. Stay out of your head. I hope that answers your question.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so many people hear when we talk about like this health journey we're on, it sounds kind of cliche. Like everyone says like, oh, I'm on a journey, but it really is so true, because it just starts with a first step. And for me, my first step was back in 2022, just watching Instagram reels, basically of everyone talking shit about seed oils. And I was wondering like, what the heck is a seed oil? I don't know what that is. And just the more that I saw it, the more I learned about it, it just made sense. Like, this doesn't sound good. This is just engine lubricant. I should not be having this in my food. And I was using a ton of it in my food for years. Like when I was backpacking through Australia and New Zealand for a couple of years before that, I was living in hostels everywhere I went, and hostels always have this big free shelf of all the stuff that people need to get rid of before they fly home. And there's always a bunch of canola oil and vegetable oil. And me being the cheap ass I am, like, oh, like, look at all this free oil I can use to cook my lean chicken breast in. So I literally had like multiple bottles of this crap in my little cubby and was using that for every meal and had no idea. So it just took that one step when I was living in Texas in 2022 of removing that, replacing it with animal fats, ghee and butter and tallow, and even stuff like, you know, coconut oil and avocado oil is like a gray area. It's not terrible for you, but it's still plant. Yeah, it's not great. It's not poisoning you as bad, but just stick with animal fats for people looking for that.
There you go.
Because that's not just less bad for you. It's good for you. It's very healthy. But anyway, I realized the first, and it always takes this, the first sort of symptom relief is really that light bulb moment of like, oh crap, I made a decision about something I'm putting in my mouth and it changed me. You kind of need that to get the gears turning. For me, it was, I stopped sunburning. The apartment complex I was at had a pool and these big sun chairs, lawn chairs, whatever, beach chairs, whatever you call them. And I would go lay out there every once in a while, but I had to be very short, because I've known my entire life that if I'm outside more than 20, 30 minutes, I'm going to start burning. That was just like the way that I've always been my entire life. But as soon as I removed the seed oils, because I'd heard in the videos that people were reporting that they became much more sun absorbent, they stopped burning. So I was like, hey, let's try it. So a few months after having only animal fats to cook with, that was the only change. I was still eating a bunch of carbs and crap and pasta and things. Like I wasn't eating healthy yet, but I just removed the seed oils. And all of a sudden I was laying out there and I started small. I kind of worked my way up, but I wasn't burning at all. I was just getting more tan. And I was like, this is crazy. So the crazy weirdos on the internet were like totally right about this one. I wonder what else they're right about. And so then I got rid of the nonstick pans and the plastic utensils. That was another thing that I was terrible about for years. I just didn't even think about like, oh, I'm sure it's fine to just have this plastic being melted into my food. That can't be bad, whatever. And so I had all stainless steel and wooden utensils. And then I started learning more about like how meat is really important. I was still kind of listening to like the animal based people at the time. So I still had a lot of fruits and vegetables, but you know, it was an improvement. I was at least getting rid of the processed food. Like I remember the first time I went shopping and was at Costco looking at all the things with nutrition facts. And this is kind of the first level for a lot of people is just learning to look at the ingredients list and being like, oh, I can't get this. I can't get this. Now that I'm a couple of years in, I know that if it has a nutrition facts label at all, it's out. That is the true realization eventually. If it doesn't have one single ingredient and it didn't used to walk and have a mother, then you shouldn't be eating it. But you know, that took, it's a process. Like we said, it's a journey for people to go through those steps. And the exciting part about it that just gets addicting is you legitimately feel better each time you make one of these steps. And you start to have, and as you talked about, your brain starts to open up. Like I never had debilitating mental illness, but I had more energy. You know, I didn't need naps anymore. I had more focus and that just like gradually increased. And all of a sudden I was like, I want to learn more. Give me more, more, more. So I just spent more time learning about the stuff, listening to podcasts like a maniac. I've always loved podcasts. I would go out. I would walk out of the house at like 7 p.m. in Austin, Texas, is where I was living. It's a great walkable city. I would walk around till like 1 in the morning. I'd walk for like 6 hours just going through podcasts, just like learning, because I was so curious what else out there I was missing, because it just blew my mind that I was missing so much. And one thing leads to another. And as you go down the diet rabbit hole, you just come to the realization at some point that plants are a negative for you, whether it comes in industrialized vegetable oil form, like the first thing I learned, or if it's, you know, the produce aisle at the store. All of these plants come from a long lineage of millions of years of evolution to deter things from eating it. So it's full of chemicals, not to mention all the man-made pesticides added on top of it. And this notion that we need these fruits and vegetables and grains, like you said, from the food pyramid. And I was same as you, like a food pyramid house growing up. We were strict to the guidelines. I went to my grandma's house. We had whole wheat toast and margarine because butter's bad. And we always had a little bit of meat, but it was usually like lean chicken breast. Beef was always looked down upon. We didn't have hardly any of that unless it was like a very special treat. But, you know, I just went down this path and just found like that was all based on lies. The USDA was a total fraud. It was all an operation by the sugar industry to paint animal fat as the enemy, because they needed that to be the enemy in order to not let people figure out that what they were putting into the food was causing all this heart disease that people were so manic about figuring out. After what President Eisenhower, I think it was Eisenhower, who had like a heart attack, and the whole country would just put in a panic. Like, what is this? And Ansel Keys stepped up to the plate. I know, it's the thing that we've been eating for millions of years. I'm sure that's the problem. And he had enough charisma and there's enough corruptibility just primed for the picking that it just ended up sticking for no other reason than just money and people just getting paid off. So really wild ride we've all been on. And like you, I've just found out this crazy carnivore diet that people like Jordan and Michaela Peterson and Sean Baker and Anthony Chafee are talking about on the internet. The first time anyone hears about it, who's alive today, hears about it, they think it sounds nuts because it goes against everything we've ever heard. And it's a completely natural reaction when you hear something that's completely different than everything you ever heard to just think it must be crazy and go on with your day. But the more times that you just get hit by that, you see the thumbnail pop up on the YouTube sidebar, you see more YouTube reels, you hear, you know, a friend out there mentioning it, it's just going to keep on growing. And I've definitely seen that over the last year. It's continuing to grow. And the fact that human connection is now more important than ever, as we were talking about before we hit the record button, there's so much noise out there. Everyone is becoming aware of this. They're becoming more skeptical of authority figures. They're starting to do more of their own research. They're utilizing the tools we have, like social media and YouTube, the infinite library of knowledge, if you use it correctly. And they're blazing their own path and figuring things out for themselves. And it's so exciting because this is how we're going to fix this mess. We're going to really dig our way out of it one person at a time, one podcast at a time, with guys like you coming out, telling your story, me trying to push it out there. And it's super exciting time right now.
It is. And I'm thrilled to be living in this particular time period of human history because of it. I've been down that rabbit hole many times with regards to all the things that we've been lied to about, with regard to diet, with regard to things, natural plants as medicine, you know, the cannabis issue, the mushroom issue. I've learned firsthand that we've been lied to about all of it, about every bit of it. And then you start learning why we were lied to, because if we can think and strategize for ourselves, we don't need a government official looking over our shoulder directing traffic for us. We can strategize, we can plan, we can create scenarios on how we're going to deal with certain kinds of problems, issues, and or obstacles. And we're not reactive or responsive, we're thoughtful. We're using our brain as it was designed to be used. We're impervious to fear for the most part. It's like over the last 4 years, while there was this great panic going on, and I'm not even going to say the V word at all, you know what I'm talking about. I wasn't worried for one moment. I was never afraid. I could see very clearly what was happening, why it was happening the way it was. I could understand why they were, it was basically a test run in preparation for something worse, to see how easily manipulated people could be through fear. And all the media is in on it. So, you know, you've got to be aware that the media is not to be believed. They're not on our side ever. I don't care how many human feel good at the end of it stories they run. That's all for clicks. That's all for advertising. It's not because they believe it. It's not because that's what they want to see. I'm old enough to remember when journalists actually did good work, that they weren't compromise, that they weren't following an ideology. And frankly, the people like you and myself and others, you know, I interviewed Dr. Ken Berry, gosh, it's been almost 4 years ago now, on my Instagram. And he said, Brett, people in power fear people like me and you, because we can think for ourselves. We can make decisions for ourselves. Not because we're experts, but just because we can see clearly. There's nothing obfuscating our vision. Where our brains are not inflamed anymore, and they're functioning as they're supposed to. That changes everything. I don't need an expert to tell me the best way to live my life for anything. I just don't need it. I can read, I can think, I can process. You know, I've come to recognize that the dietitian profession was created specifically to protect the revenue streams of big food and big pharma. I drive dietitians crazy. You know, they've been predicting my imminent demise for almost 6 years now. You know, this coming July 16th will be 6 years I've been carnivore. And I've had zero downside. I have never had a diet-related problem since I began living this way. I haven't had a headache in over 5.5 years. I used to go through Tylenol and ibuprofen like candy because my head always hurt. I was always miserable with pain. Nothing hurts now. Life is beautiful. I'm 63 years old. All my male parts work as they did when I was 25. Same for my wife. We have a wonderful life together because she's carnivore. She eliminated osteoarthritis from her shoulders and from her hands. We feel like we're living a fairy tale a good bit of the time. And you're going to tell me that you're going to take away my ability to eat meat, or you're going to tax it to the point to where I can't afford it anymore? Go for it. See what happens. You know, I got weapons. I know how to hunt. I got plenty of ammo. I know how to get more. And if push comes to shove, I'll make my own. That's not uncommon. It's not even really that difficult to do. It's just time consuming. I'm never going to not eat meat. There's no argument that anybody can make to justify putting my sanity at risk. My sanity is my most prized earthly possession. And as long as I keep eating this way, I never have to worry about symptoms ever coming back. I don't ever have to worry about the next full moon putting me back in the ditch. I don't have to worry about anything. In fact, I don't really have anything to fear at all. Nothing. And when you realize there's nothing to fear, that's the best form of freedom I can express.
I could not agree more with that. I'm right there in the same boat. Like when you get your health in order and your diet in order and really give your body the fuel that it needs and your brain the fuel that it needs, this was definitely something I experienced. It was just my excitement for the future, my motivation to build a better future, and just like, and this has to be just all around sort of hormones and testosterone. It's hard to explain, but like, I just want to kick life's ass more than ever. I want to just like put so much energy into helping people and building a better future more than I ever have before. Like, because even though I didn't have anything as debilitating as you did for most of my life, I was kind of just like riding sort of steady neutral, like, you know, I just going to school, going to work, not really thinking that big, sitting in traffic, listening to the radio and, you know, listening to music. And this is sort of just the NPC life that we call it on Twitter, just NPC, non-playable character, like when you're in the video games and everyone's kind of just walking around doing their job and not really thinking outside of their role. And it's so common. Like, I haven't heard any case against this. When people fix their diet, cut the plants out, their brain upgrades to a level they haven't seen before, and they start thinking much bigger. And it's damn near impossible to not get conspiratorial about this, because, man, I wonder if there's anyone out there, Brett, that maybe is incentivized to not want people to think too hard. Maybe the people who control all the media arms, control the government, they're printing money for themselves and their friends, and they don't really like it when people raise a ruckus about it or revolt. And you look back in the history, and this has been happening forever. Back in the Roman days, the leaders when things were getting sketchy and revolts were starting to pop up, bread and circus time. Everyone gets bread, grains, everyone gets grains, because that makes them docile and weak, and they stop getting antsy and they stop thinking at that level of wanting fairness in their lives. They stop caring. They go and watch the sports ball and the gladiator games, and they just stop caring so much.
You're so right. That's so true. Oh my gosh. I you know, it's like listening to myself there. I swear, everything you're saying, I agree with 1,000%. And it has, we have been manipulated into believing things about ourselves that have no basis in reality whatsoever. And, you know, the people in power who are desperate to do whatever is necessary to maintain their power will lie and manipulate and use fear to push people around to the place to where they have to either be compliant or pay a significant penalty. Unless they're like you and I, and we can strategize our way in and around that nonsense. You know, and when you have no fear within you, you are capable of great things, because there's nothing getting in your way of creating the reality that you desire. There just isn't.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons why I continue to do these kinds of interviews when I get the opportunity. I never turn down a chance to share my experience, because it always leads to these kinds of discussions. Because in truth, that's what's happening. You know, with the election coming up, I can see
it. I was just going to bring that up. You read my mind.
I can see it as clear as I can see your face on my iPad screen right now. It's obvious what's going to be attempted. It's obvious that they're willing literally to destroy and burn down the whole nation so they could rule over the ashes. And if people allow it to happen, they have no one but themselves to blame. That's one of the reasons why at the end of all my carnivore specific talks, I always say the same thing. You know, eat your meat, drink your water, do not live in fear, respect what should be respected, stand up and say no when it's necessary. And always remember, no matter what life throws at you, you've always got something to be thankful for. Now, I've been saying that same mantra for years now, because it's always going to be true. Until certain things happen on a spiritual level, you know, that's the manipulators are going to maintain their power to manipulate. Though I'm starting to see fear coming from them, because they're recognizing more of us are aware than they anticipated. And you can't scare us. You can't frighten us into doing something we know is not good for us. And there's nothing you can do short of killing us to make us do what's not good for us.
And I've never been more optimistic about this trend continuing to grow, because people like you and me are, and I'm optimistic about my entire generation of millennials and Gen Z beginning to see social media as a tool for improving themselves and learning, rather than like a time-wasting apparatus as it has been for so long. Because like people my age were basically born into this where, you know, the screen is kind of just you watch cat videos and you play little motorcycle riding games and you kind of just waste your time on it. That's what I used when I was a kid. You know, I got a Game Boy and I was playing it all the time. As soon as I got a phone, I was playing games. And so most people start just kind of doing the eye candy, you know, just time wasty stuff. But I think that people are maturing and there's more content coming out now. People getting really fucking real about what's going on. And people are less afraid to give their whole story. Like it's a very common trend now for people, like, you know, the Instagram models, like the women showing the picture of like, this is what it looks like when I don't use a filter, and just being more real, because it's so mentally taxing to be a fake person all the time in the majority of cases. And people are just kind of throwing that out, and it's becoming cool and trendy to be real and show the dark side. And that's sort of the first step. And as more and more people are just coming out and really speaking truth to power it's getting harder and harder for these big tech companies and their shareholders and overlord, like the governments are trying to, you know, insert their power wherever they can, like try to ban certain things on these platforms. It's becoming harder and harder to do that because it's just becoming so proliferated across every platform. And now there's competition between the platforms to, you know, be more free speech minded, and more people are like valuing that in their decision for where they go to spread their message.
God bless Elon Musk. That's all I can say to that.
Yeah, I mean, X is definitely better than Twitter or than Instagram.
Oh, it's head and shoulders, and it's been interesting. I'd been on a 2.5 year shadow ban on Instagram for a long time. And it was frustrating to hell. I was like this close to hitting 15,000 followers. And then suddenly somebody decided, well, we're not going to let that happen. And I lost like 400 followers. And I'm just now starting to go back because I figured out I take the weekends off of social media. I do that primarily clear out my brain because there's still the occasional ridicule troll who, yeah, keep working on your future heart attack, and you know, how's those clogged arteries, and you know, arterial sclerosis, and all this stuff. And I don't even comment anymore. I just block them because I keep my social media as positive as possible. I've always done that, but we are at a place where real change for the greater collective consciousness is it's happening. People, you know, where it's no longer, the carnivore diet is no longer a fad like it was, and probably rightfully designated as such when I first got into it. Well, there's so many thousands of us now, and there's all this documentation. You know, well, it's just anecdotes. The reality is anecdotes are a form of data. You're 1 kilobyte's worth of data. I'm 1 kilobyte worth of data. You put all that together and pretty soon you've got a terabyte full of examples of people who've eliminated chronic illness from their lives in a way that doesn't comport with what the tradition, what the media, what big food, what big pharma are dependent upon happening. And once we break their stranglehold, which is coming, it's going to take a while, but it's coming. We're going to do it from the ground up, not from the top down. Because when people stop buying their pills, I haven't had a pharmaceutical medication since 2017. I'm not suffering from a lack of pharmaceuticals. Neither are you. Neither is my wife. I'm sure people are going to be shocked when I have Medicare forced upon me when I turn 65, you know, and I'll probably go do one of those wellness visits just to see if it plays out like I anticipated. But I have, unless I am in an accident, I break something, somebody attacks me, cuts me open, something like that, through illegal aggression, I have no need to ever go to a hospital. I have no need to go to a doctor. Well, what about your labs, Brett? Come on, man. If you don't show me a lab sheet, I'm not going to believe a word you say. Well, the way I've approached that is, if you're that curious, you can pay for the lab test. Because I don't care what that lab test says. And every time somebody's taken me up on that, I publish the results all over my social media. Because every 2 years on carnivore, somebody has paid for me to get new labs. And every time they've improved even more over the stellar place they were. And last time I got lab work done was February 2022. I had less than a 0.04% chance of ever having a cardiovascular event. Now, that's not zero, but it's pretty damn close. What do I have to be afraid of?
Yeah.
I mean, again, it's the fear thing. If you're not afraid, you're no longer a peasant. You're no longer a helpless victim.
And the way that these labs and tests have been set up, and the RDAs, that's recommended daily allowance, I think, of different, you know, vitamins and nutrients and what your blood marker should be and what your cholesterol should be. All of these were crafted during that period of maximum corruption where they're trying to like have a message, and like the biggest one being cholesterol is bad. So they're all those things are really created at a time where it's trying to angle people toward a certain agenda. And even then, as you said, people are still getting them done to just shut the people up. They just won't stop talking about it. And they're all better anyway. They're still better.
In 2015, my triglycerides were over 300. In 2022, they were 51. Now, do I need to know any more about my lipids than that? Not really.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I don't have any physical issues. I have flatline energy all day, every day. I never wait. I don't have bad days. I haven't had, even the day my dad passed away was not a bad day. It was a good day because he was no longer suffering and the family was no longer suffering watching him suffer. I got to come home to my wife after a 3-week absence helping my mom and take care of my dad in home hospice. It was not a bad day. He was free of that misery. It was not a bad day. It was a good day. It was a sad day, but it was a good day. And you know, that's one thing in spiritualism. There's all these people who are, they live and breathe by astrology. And I'm like, I make them a little annoyed because I'm like, I don't have bad days. I don't have bad weeks. I don't care what house is rising and what is descending. It doesn't make a shit to me. I feel good every day. I experience effortless daily happiness every day of my life and have been for over 4 years. What do I care if Pisces is rising? It just doesn't impact me. Now, I'm not saying that it's not a valuable tool for everyone, because some people do benefit from it. And I have learned some things about myself through it that have proven to be quite accurate. But bad days? What is a bad day? I can't even define what a bad day would be. I just don't live in that paradigm anymore, and I don't think you do either. And that's why we are so positive. It's why we're hopeful for the future, why we can see solutions where other people only see death, damnation, and darkness. And we find joy in everything we look at, for the most part.
And I think this can also be a useful framework for people who are beginning that health improvement journey, who are maybe a little bit jaded on this idea of like being perfect, and maybe there's a little bit of pressure there. But I think that what you said is important, where it's a spectrum of your ability to handle situations. Because I'd argue, as long as we're all of these walking meat suits in a wild world full of crazy stimuli, the mental health battle is never like 100% perfectly won. It's more about just how you handle your situation and your surroundings. And like, don't worry about finding this perfect image of perfection. Just continue improving. Have the best vessel of life that you can, and you'll just find that you're able to handle these things better and make it through the steps that get you to where you want to be.
And more importantly, take words like worry, concern, and fear and flush them down the toilet where they'll do you the most good. Because what name one positive thing that worrying has ever done for anyone? A positive thing that being afraid has ever done for anyone? A positive thing about being concerned?
Maybe save them from getting eaten by a lion back in our ancestral days, but
well, then you ought to know how to run or how to stay away from where the lions roam. You know, that's, again, you could apply strategy. don't go across that hill unless you want to end your time in this incarnation, because there's something over there just dying to eat you. Stay away from it. Brother, I've enjoyed this discussion, and I have no doubt we could go for another 2 hours, but I'm starting to run into a time issue.
Absolutely. Hey, totally understand that. I'm glad we got to run this for a while, and we got to cover so much, Brett. And as we've been talking, I have this huge notepad piled up, because like you said, there's so many things I want to get into, but time is time. It continues moving, and I will be in touch with you, my friend, because I would love to do this again sometime. We're both on these journeys together in our different lives, different ways, but there's so much to cover in so little time. So we'll continue being in touch for sure.
I agree completely. I've enjoyed this immensely. And, you know, we can always do it again. There's so many other facets of this that we can discuss that we didn't get into that people would find not just interesting, but helpful. And, you know, my final thoughts are, if you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, give the carnivore lifestyle a 30 to 90 day try. Follow the directions. Only eat when you're hungry. When you're hungry, only eat meat until you're not another bite full. Notice the absence of dairy or eggs in that sentence. Only eat the meat that you crave, that satisfies you, that you can afford. And under no circumstance do you ever put any kind of a sweet taste into your mouth. Be patient. Trust the process, trust your body, and let your body take care of you by nourishing it properly. That's it. That's all. It's not a complicated thing. You don't need a book to follow to see how to succeed at the carnivore.
Nor dietitians and nutritionists like you talk about. Shouldn't be a job. There are no dietitians in the wild for different animal groups. They just know what to eat.
Exactly. And it's that simple. It really is. You know, we can talk about the how specific to an individual it all is. And the most frustrating question I ever get asked, Ben, I'll say this and then I'll shut up, is how do you eat and how long did it take you to eliminate whatever? You know, I have to go through this same speech every time. How much I eat, how I eat is irrelevant to how you should eat. Your physiology is specific to you as an individual. My physiology is specific to me for the same reasons. What works for me doesn't work for my wife. She eats very differently. She's got different hormonal issues. You know, she's you know, a woman, so it's different. She's still just as carnivore as I am, but she does it a lot differently than I do. And I use her.
There is variety within that terminology for sure.
To make jokes about, because I think it's hilarious. Oh, that's not carnivore. Who are you to decide what is and what is not carnivore? I wouldn't do that for love nor money. And the other point I wanted to make that I think it may have escaped me. No, it's healing is always specific to the person. Well, how long did it take you to eliminate your depression issues? And that's when I know people who are asking that, they're genuinely sick, because only a depressed person would ask that. And the answer is no one can know. I don't know how long it took you to heal from what you healed from. And unless, you know, and the only reason people know how long it took me to heal is because I've done all these interviews. But how fast I heal has nothing to do with your situation. I was very low carb for 2 years before I started carnivore. I didn't really have a transitional period. That's very atypical. And, you know, I eliminated my depression symptoms in 24 days. That's not the norm. So you can't judge what's going to happen to you by what happened to me, and vice versa. And with that, I'll shut up now. This has been a lot of fun.
I appreciate you so much, Brett Lloyd. Thank you for sharing your story. I can't wait to do it again. And we are only 6 minutes away from breaking the record you told me about for interview length with you with Judy Cho. Could I tack on a video of you jamming a guitar solo at the end of this for my listeners to listen to on the way out the door?
You certainly may.
Let's go.
All right.
Brett Lloyd, I appreciate you so much, man. Have a great one. This has been an excellent conversation, and we will be in touch, my friends.
Thank you so much, Ben. Keep doing what you're doing. I love your attitude. I love your energy. And, you know, people need to know that they don't have to suffer needlessly. It's just not necessary.
Absolutely. And I can't wait to keep watching that change. It's coming. Have a good one, sir.
All right. Be well, my friend. I've really enjoyed this. We'll be right back. was so much fun. Felt amazing. Hope you heard something you enjoyed. Remember, you're never too old to get your blues on. Don't let anybody ever tell you different. And have a great day.